Alright, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were. And welcome back to the Oasis Podcast and also to 1001 Albums Podcast. Today is a joint episode which is going to go out on both channels because we are talking about an album, but it's an Oasis album. We're talking about What's the Story Morning Glory, because the 25th anniversary is upon us very shortly. And today I'm talking to a very important person in that album, Brian Cannon. So he's the sleeve designer, and as you'll get on to hear, he was there for pretty much the whole time at Rockfield Studios when they were recording it, plus Orinoco for the mixing when Paul Weller came in. And yeah, some amazing stories all about that time, including how he came up with all the sleeve stuff as well. So really, really interesting. Really hope you guys enjoy it. The only news really, on a personal note, I interviewed Andy Bell this week, which is really exciting, and that will be coming very soon. So I hope you guys enjoy that. Amazing to get another official member of Oasis done, which is absolutely brilliant. He told some fantastic stories. It's great to get Andy talking about Oasis, which was absolutely brilliant. And also there's been a couple of other announcements for Morning Glory 25 sort of tie-in stuff. The Oasis official channel has released all the videos in HD on YouTube with remastered audio, which is good, I suppose, if you're bothered about that. I'm not really bothered about that, but you know, better to have them if they're going to be on there, better to have them in like remastered audio than not, and HD. And also probably the biggest thing for me was just announced the other day, there's going to be a documentary of Noel Gallagher going back to Rockfield Studios and doing a bit of filming there as well, which is really, really cool. Shame the other guys aren't involved. It is a Noel-only thing, it looks like. But then we did have that bit of Liam and Boned at Rockfield from the documentary that came out earlier this year. So I suppose if you know, clever people out there could slice them together and then have Noel and Liam sort of interjecting. So, but anyway, there we go. So there is some good stuff coming out for Morning Glory 25. But the best thing coming out of Morning Glory 25 is this podcast with Brian Cannon after this musical interlude. So welcome back to the Oasis podcast, Brian Cannon. How are you doing, sir?
I'm wonderful, thanks, James, and thanks for asking me to come back on.
No, you're more than welcome. It's been, this is crazy, you won't believe this. It's been coming up 3.5 years since you first did the podcast.
Wow, it's that long ago. It doesn't seem like 10 minutes ago, good Lord.
I know, it's madness. It was like, because yeah, I'm eternally grateful to you, Brian, because it was the very early days of the show. I'd had a couple of other interviews. I'd had like Mark Feltham, the harmonica player, but you were the first like really big name that that came back to me, having sent out all the emails. And so getting you, that was then the in with Tony McCarroll and various other people, because I could always say, "Oh, I've got Brian. Oh, Brian Cannon did it," you know. So that massively helped me out. So thank you very much.
Glad to be of help. I can tell you're passionate about it, just like I am, and you're doing it for the right reasons. So I'm glad to be on board with you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, so just pick up. I know the main thing we're going to talk about today is it's 25th anniversary coming up of What's the Story Morning Glory, which is an album you've got quite a history with yourself. But before we get on to that, I just want to say what have you been up to? I know the Microdot Boutique, obviously you were hit like everyone was with lockdown, but that's reopened again and seems to be going strong.
Yeah, well, when lockdown began, obviously we had to shut the shop. So we, I just transferred all our efforts then into the online side of things. And, you know, as a lot of online sellers will tell you, everybody's sat at home with nothing to do, with money burning all in the pocket because they're all furloughed and yet nothing to spend it on. So online sales across the board, I think, were up. So we were no exception. That was great. And then now the shop's back open again. It's doing really well because, you know, we're the gateway to the Lake District in Kendal. Nobody's going abroad. A lot of people holidaying at home. People are coming to the lakes. And it's funny, actually, you stand in the shop and you'll have a married couple come in and you'll hear the wife go, "So this is why we're holidaying in the lakes." And it's been phenomenal. I mean, people are literally... I put a post about this on social media the other day, but, you know, in a time when the high street is in absolute crisis and shops are shutting left, right and centre, you know, people are driving for 3 hours to come to our shop. It's amazing. And... yeah, I'm absolutely made up. So I've been putting all my efforts into that, really, building that up, looking to expand it, you know, get premises elsewhere. But that's a bit, I can't really reveal much about that just yet. But yeah, everything's great.
Oh, fantastic. And I saw Tony was up with you the other day signing some bits. That looked like good fun.
Tony was up in the boutique last Friday. Always have pleasure to have him in. And I was round at Bonehead's house the other day with him while he was photographing his famous Epiphone guitar that he played on everything. And, well, you know, I can't really go into that either, but, you know, it all will be revealed soon.
Well, I was about to say, I saw that post and I was very excited to wonder what that could be, but you're not going to tell me.
Well, I'm not going to tell you just now because it's a secret at the minute, but yeah, everything will be out to the open soon. You know,
maybe you'll tell me when we're off air, mate. Yeah,
yeah, of course I will. Yeah,
no, you won't. Up on the Morning Glory thing, because as I say, this is the 25th anniversary of that album. So I just wanted to take back. So obviously, you'd worked with them from day one, from the Supersonic single all through the Definitely Maybe stuff. So what was your first sort of the first time you heard from Noel or any of the guys about what's happening next? I suppose what some might say would have been the obvious thing. Would that have been the first thing that you heard from that became the Morning Glory album?
Do you know what? It's all a bit of a blur, really. I can't... Yeah, I mean, that was obviously the first single off of it, and that was recorded way before the Morning Glory sessions. It just happened to be tacked onto that album. But when I actually... Do you know what? I can't put a specific date to it, but what I will say is, whenever I was round at Noel's house, or wherever you were with him when he had a guitar, he was always playing new stuff and always playing stuff. I mean, for example, when they were recording Morning Glory, they played virtually the whole of Be Here Now to us one night.
Wow.
So that's how ahead of the game he was. And so I can't say, yes, it was on this date at that location, but he was constantly playing stuff to us acoustically, just off the bat, really.
Hmm. And did you think, hearing those songs, because it was a bit of a departure from Definitely Maybe that had been that pure out-and-out kind of rock and roll, obviously except for Married With Children at the end, did you think, like, hold on a minute, Noel, this is... I know, what is it, Tony says when he first heard those songs, he thought, you're finished. You're finished. This is, you know, people aren't going to like this. And then, he was a little bit wrong. What did you think when you first heard those demos?
Well, I'd heard them just as him playing it as an acoustic, you see. So I think the major difference, how can I put it now? It's as much to do with the production as the songs, isn't it? It changed from one album to the next. So, you know, if you're listening to half, if you just play Definitely Maybe to you acoustically, do you know what I mean? It's not that different, really, yeah, to true. The next band, I guess. So a lot of it was the production style, the way it was recorded. Definitely Maybe was recorded as live. Morning Glory wasn't. The section, this, you know, separated everybody out and recorded like, you know, a proper band would do it, I suppose. But you know what? It was... I wasn't like, oh my God, it's not like Definitely Maybe, because I thought, this is the next album. This is where they're at now. This is the new stuff. This is what it sounds like. This is great, basically.
No, that's cool. So what about going, because you were actually one of the few people that actually went down to Rockfield and were there. Can you just tell us about that? What memories you got from that time?
I spent more time in Rockfield studio during that recording than anybody else, including Noel Gallagher and Owen Morris. I never left for the whole duration of the recording session. I was there under the guise of doing, in inverted commas, research. That was my excuse for being there. And it was fantastic. It was, do you know what, at that time I would have said to you, if you'd have asked me, the Rockfield studio is my favourite place in the world. Not just the studio itself, but the vibe around it. Have you seen the film about the place?
I didn't catch it. I saw the trailer and I meant to see it, but I haven't caught up with it yet. Did you enjoy it?
I haven't seen it myself, but you know, I'm guessing if you had seen it, you'd kind of get... It's a magical place, just like the Glastonbury site is a magical place. You know, it's not just about the festival. You can just feel it in the ground, if you like. It's a special place. And, you know, it's just a joy to be there. And you've got to bear in mind that, you know, despite, well, you know, because you're a massive fan, they were consummate professionals and great musicians. Like, Liam would just have one or two vocal takes and he'd be done. Bonehead, bang, guitar down in one go. So basically, most of the time, it's just Owen and Noel in the recording, in the control room, putting the whole thing together. Noel's overdubbing guitars and what have you. And the rest of us would be like a bunch of kids playing outside. I mean, we actually, at one point, I remember Bonehead and I think Gwigsy buying air rifles and they set up a shooting range out the back. And, you know, that filled in time for a couple of days, all shooting at targets. Fantastic. Nobody managed to get shot either. It was incredible. So there was that. And then, you know, you've obviously heard the famous story where the other band from the studio down the road ended up coming back and all hell broke loose. Well, yeah. You know, that was kind of symptomatic of the fact that Liam got his vocal down first time, every time, more or less. So he had loads of spare time in his hand. That was his drinking partner. We were just going to Monmouth and go on the lash. But I mean, can you imagine, Monmouth's it's a small Welsh market village, you know what I mean? And it's a tiny little centre, there's probably half a dozen pubs or so, they're all in stone's throw of each other. So we just go on this pub crawler, and Manny was living there at the time, because I think he, after the Roses had finished recording it, he ended up with a girl from Monmouth, so he was in town. That's when I first met him. So we were just like this band of, I don't know, just in the pubs around Monmouth. And there was that famous night where I bumped into John Robb, you know, the journalist, John Robb.
Yeah.
He was producing the other band. I've known John for years. Just got, I mean, you know, this is all well documented in the Supersonic movie, but, you know, it's pretty much how they told it. The other band came back, they just started acting up. God knows what got into them. Next thing you know, there's a food fight breaking out in the kitchen, and then Liam kicks off, tells them all to fuck off. You know, Bonner gets involved. I think somebody got punched. Then Noel comes back. Noel walks into the middle. Noel's oblivious to all this. He's in the recording studio, because the recording studio and the living quarters were two separate parts of this. They're basically all farm buildings.
Yeah.
And he comes back to the living quarters to find all hell's broke loose, and he goes off his nut, and then he ends up fighting with Liam. the cricket bat was involved. Liam gets his hand broken. Comes back to my house in Wigan, actually. I had it plastered at the local hospital in Wigan the following day.
Wait, Monmouth to Wigan, that's a trek.
Yeah, well, what he said to me, basically, the band scattered. No one left us. When this kick off, I locked myself in my room because, you know, if you... It wasn't very often... Right, here we go. Liam and Noel falling out was nothing like as frequent as people would make out, as the tabloid press make out. But when they did fall out, it was kind of pretty explosive. And you just knew to keep out of the way because... Not that... That was the worst I ever saw it. That was like physical violence.
Right.
But, you know, it's like if somebody's arguing with the bird, you don't get involved. You just leave them to it because it's a heated, domestic, passionate situation. It's the same with brothers. You can't get involved in it. You know, on the odd occasion, I saw somebody try to intervene. Hey, lads, bonehead would also just leave them to it. Just leave them. There's nothing you can do. And after all the kickoff had happened, Noel, who couldn't drive, but still can't drive, made Alan White drive him back to London in, I think it was Bonehead's hire car. I'm sure that was what I heard. So they shot off to London. We all fell asleep, you know, because everybody had been drinking. I got up the following morning and there was like literally doors broken, window frames hanging out, and the place was fucked. And Liam, the recording session's off, obviously, because Noel's not there.
Yeah.
And Liam says to me, well, I can't go to London because I might bump into our kid. I can't go back to Manchester because my mum will want to know why I'm not in the studio. I'll have to come home with you, Cannon. So me and him drove back to Wigan and we get back to my house. And by the time we got back to Wigan, his hand had ballooned up like the size of a balloon, literally. Because you've got to get that seen to, mate. So we went to the local infirmary. I've still got the x-ray. I have still got it. Right.
You kept it. That's brilliant, Brian.
Listen to this. You're not supposed to. The idea is you go to the hospital, you get your arm x-rayed, they see that there's a break, they plaster it up, they give you the... There's no physical x-rays anymore. It's a digital file. It's like a negative. It's like... Yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They give you a physical x-ray to take away with you. And then they say, come back in 3 weeks. They x-rayed again, and they compare the two to make sure it's healing all right.
Yeah,
do you see what I mean?
Yep.
And then you give the original x-ray back, right? So anyway, he has the x-ray, and it's got a cracked knuckle. He gets plastered up. He leaves the hospital with the x-ray and a plastered hand and comes back to my house. And the first thing, and with that night, it was a Wednesday night, and in Wigan at that time, there was a nightclub called Wigan Pier. And on a Wednesday night, they had an indie disco, and we were going there, right? And he says to me, have you got a pair of scissors? I says, yeah, why, what's up? Because I'm cutting this off. It makes me look uncool. And he cut the plaster cast off, which had only been on for half an hour, right? And we turned out to this nightclub. So the following day, he's off, goes back to wherever he's going, and he leaves behind. I should have kept the cast. Can you believe that? I never kept that. That's got binned. But I've still got the cast, and it says on it, you know, must be returned to the Royal Albert Edward Infirmary, Wigan. And he didn't take it back because he never went back. And I've still got it. That's the fight story anyway.
That's crazy. I've never heard that part. I've never heard going off to Wigan to get his hand scanned. I've heard the John Robb sort of obviously talked about the...
There you go then. You've got the Oasis podcast has got another exclusive off me.
Another exclusive. Wow. And has Garcia tried to buy the x-ray off you?
Do you know what? There has been talk of it, but I just wouldn't sell it because it must be, hands down, the number one most bonkers piece of Oasis memorabilia in the world. It's got to be. I can't think, you know, it's an x-ray, and it says on it in the corner, Gallagher, Liam, and it's got the date on it. It's sometime in May 1995, right? That's stuck on it, right? And there's even a letter with it, and on the inside it gives his mum's address because he was probably living at his mum's then. And his mum's phone number's on it and all kinds. Anyway.
Fantastic.
He's got a broken knuckle sustained by being assaulted by the Noel. Wow. During the recording of Morning Glory. What an artifact.
That is absolutely brilliant. I'll give you a tenner for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a figure of £10,000 banding around at one point, but I wouldn't have sold it for that. Well, I haven't sold it.
Fair enough. In the rest of the sessions, do you remember Weller turning up and doing Champagne Supernova?
I was there when he came and did that. That was in Orinoco Studios in London during the mixing of the album, not the recording.
Got you. And how did that feel? Was it? Did you know Weller at the time?
I'd met him before because I think he came to a gig in the Kentish Town Forum that they played. So I had met him. And I'm a massive Jam fan. You know, I'm not so much a fan of his solo stuff. I'm not saying I dislike it, but I was a Jam fan. Do you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And it's Paul Weller at the end of the day. And it's like, You know, Paul Weller, he's a legend. Whether, you know, I know. So, yeah, that was cool.
And what about, there's the big rumour they talk about is that actually it's Noel plays, like you said, that Bonehead comes in and he plays his part. I suppose, did you see Gwigs go in and play his part? But then obviously the big rumour is then that they go, okay, thanks very much, guys, see ya. And then Noel would just kind of wipe everything, especially maybe Gwigs' parts, and play them all. So any inkling of whether or not it's actually Bonehead and Gwigs playing on that? Or do you think Noel might have wiped them and done his own thing?
That's absolute nonsense. Of course Bonehead played on there. Bonehead's a better musician than Noel is. Yeah. There's no way. He keeps better time. There is no way on this planet that Bonehead's guitar was... Who told you that?
It's just one of those things. It's just one of those rumours over the years that... But I suppose because he multi-tracks so much, it's like, what would he have wiped and what would he have kept?
No, there's no chance that Bonehead's guitar went. I mean, that's the rock, that's the bedrock, that's the foundation of everything, isn't it?
Sure.
I have seen him playing bass. I'm not suggesting he wiped all Gwigs' bass, but during that session, I did see Noel playing the bass and recording bass. But again, to suggest that he did it all on the album, I don't know. I can't believe that would be true. I'm not saying it's not true. I don't know one way or the other. But I can guarantee you that Bonehead plays guitar on that record.
Sure. And was it different, like having, you know, obviously you're still close with Tony now and your mates with Tony at the time. Was it a bit different with this Cockney coming into the group suddenly, Alan White? And also, could you tell the difference? Because I think you can very much hear it, especially on tracks like Wonderwall and Don't Look Back in Anger. The drumming that he brings is, you know, probably another level to what Tony could have done. Was it a different dynamic having Alan there?
Yeah, totally different. He's a different person, different. You know, I was talking to Tony the other day about drumming styles, because I just do not accept that Tony wasn't a good drummer. And I see a lot of people sniping at him on social media, like, oh, no wonder he got the sack, he was fucking rubbish. No, he wasn't rubbish at all. I don't know anybody ever, who was listening to Definitely Maybe and thought, it's a great record, this, but ooh, that drumming's not all that.
Exactly.
You know, just nobody has ever said that. So what the fuck are people going on about saying he's a shit drummer? He's, you know, he's a totally different drummer to Alan White. And the point Tony was making was every drummer is different. It's obvious, isn't it? You know,
yeah,
that is the case. And, you know, perhaps Tony's drumming wouldn't have been applicable to the new songs. I totally accept that as well. But I will not accept that Tony can't play drums well. But yeah, I always got on with Alan. I got on with all of them. You know, there was no clash of characters going on. I mean, in a way, they were quite similar. They were quite quiet. You know, they weren't in your face kind of people. They were
sure.
I got on very well with Alan, and I got on very well with Tony.
Mm. What about Owen Morris? Because he seems like a funny character. He seems like one of the maddest ones of them all, to be honest. And but he shouldn't, as the record producer, shouldn't you be there being like the boss and telling everyone what to do? But how was the dynamic there between Noel and Owen? Because they officially kind of joint produced it, didn't they?
Yeah, Owen is a madman. But we're all capable back then of being madmen. There's no doubt about that. Everybody involved, without exception. But the key to it all was, when you're working, you're working. And when you've got the work done, you can get as fucked as you want. And that's what happened. That's basically it. All the shenanigans went on when the work was done. Nobody was hammered while they were trying to get some work done. I keep saying this, and the more I get interviewed, the more this comes out, because all this nonsense about everybody being smashed out their heads all the time and falling out and violence and aggravation is a load of shit, because if that was the case, nothing would have got done. And if you think about it, in the 90s, Oasis were remarkably prolific. From 94 to 97, they put 3 world-beating albums out, toured the world goodness knows how many times, did about a dozen singles with videos to go along with them. The full 9 yards, they were super hard working. So to suggest that everybody was hammered all the time is palpable nonsense, because that wouldn't have been possible. So, yeah, Owen was a nutcase. So was I back then. We were all capable, like I said, of getting absolutely smashed and doing ridiculous things. But the work came first, and the work always got done first. And when the work was done, everybody was celebrated. So, that's fair enough. In terms of the dynamic, obviously Noel had a great amount of respect for Owen. At the end of the day, he's trusting him with his music. The most valuable thing in Noel's life, the most precious thing in his life, clearly, was Oasis music. And he entrusted that recording and production process to Owen Morris. I don't think he could have given a higher accolade to anybody, really. Mm.
No, absolutely. Although that's one thing I was going to say. I've never heard Noel or Owen Morris or anyone talk about this, but it must be the strangest start to an album. And because it starts off, you've got this like few seconds of the Wonderwall chords being played, but really quiet. And then it goes like, bow, bow, and then it goes into down into Hello. And so I've always thought, because I've done exactly this, that it must be that they knew that Wonderwall was going to be massive. And so it's like, I know, let's put a little bit of Wonderwall at the start, super quiet, so that when people hear it, they go, Wonderwall, I like that. I'll turn it up. That's a bit quiet. And then suddenly Hello blasts their head off. I've always read it, but I don't know if that was ever discussed, or if that's just my silly idea.
I don't know about. I think you've overthought that a bit there, James, to be honest. I'll tell you where you are. You are right, though. That's definitely Owen Morris. That there's no doubt about that, because he employed a similar tactic on the first track on the Verve's Northern Soul, where the guitar comes in ever so quietly and takes ages to build up. By which point you think, oh God, I need to turn the stereo up. And when it does come in, it blows you back out your chair. Do you know what I mean? So that's Owen, that is. I don't think anybody could have predicted the size that Wonderwall was going to be, because that took them from being, indie darlings to, that's the record that basically Housewives bought, isn't it? To become the size of Oasis, to become that big, you've got to have Housewives. Housewives, you don't ever buy records normally, buying your records, that's to take it to that level. I mean, nobody buys records anymore, but you know what I mean, back then? To transcend just that indie schmindy land and become fucking massive. Yeah. People who don't normally buy records have got to start buying it. And that's what happened with Wonderwall. And I don't think anybody could have predicted that. So, no, I don't think they did. But no, I think it's just Owen acting the goat.
Do you one of the things that was really exciting is that Tim Abbott did a few live shows a year or so ago, and a clip, because he was obviously around a bit at the time, and videoed a lot, and I know a lot of his videos ended up being used for Supersonic, And one of the clips that was ended up sort of being leaked out of one of their live events that he did, that they said like no videoing, but someone videoed it, was Liam singing Step Out. And it was amazing to hear. I mean, it was only a one-off take and he didn't quite nail it. But obviously then the fan reaction is, you know, oh, Liam should have sung Step Out. And, the fans then do their fan edits and stick Liam's vocal onto the back Step Out backing track. Do you remember that? Do you remember Liam doing Step Out? And then, you know, do you remember what happened with that? Not, not going with Liam's vocal, going with Noel's vocal?
No, I don't remember why that happened. I remember him doing it because I thought it sounded great. Because you've got to bear in mind, Liam didn't spend that much time singing. You know, there's only, 12 or 13 songs or something. And he only sung them both. He only sung them, three times maximum each. So Liam's entire recording session was about an hour and a half. That's all he's sounding. Literally, I'm not joking here.
No, yeah. I get it.
So that's basic. I mean, I've got that tape. It's got like 13 versions of Wonderwall on it, none of which Liam's singing on. See what I mean? It's just, so the bits that Liam did sing, you remember, because there was that few of them.
Yeah, got you.
But why they didn't use it, I do not know. And... That's entirely a Noel Gallagher question, or a question for Noel Gallagher, I should say. But I don't know the answer to that.
And on a Liam recording vocals thing, it's been questioned before, but I don't think we've ever heard whether or not Liam did sing Don't Look Back in Anger in the studio. We probably not, but have you got any recollection that you might have done?
I definitely don't remember that.
Okay.
I definitely don't remember that.
Fair enough.
I've never heard it. Have you heard it? Is there anything?
No, it doesn't exist. It's one of those things that I think people have talked about over the years that he may have done a version of, but no one's. I don't think he said he can't remember, but yeah.
I don't recall that at all.
Yeah, no, that's a shame. Yeah, good. All right, no, well that was all fine, but So let's talk about the artwork, Brian, because obviously, as well as just being there doing your research in inverted commas, I suppose that was the whole point, was to get there and do the artwork. So now, like with something like Some Might Say, you've been very literal and you've taken all the lyrics, literally, and you've got the sink full of fishes and all that sort of stuff. With an album like this, it's basically a knob joke. What's the story of Morning Glory? Did you think, we could just do a big erection? Or you then didn't go with that. You went with the street scene.
Well, do you know what? I always find that it's easier to do singles than it is an album, because a single, you've got one song, one set of lyrics, one vibe, you know. With an album, it's more difficult, isn't it? The initial, basically, Noel at the time was always banging on about that. He said it was riot music. Have you ever heard him say this in any interview anywhere? He's Morning Glory, probably talk about the title track, actually. Okay. It's riot music. And I agree with him. It is, you know, if you ever had a riot, that's the music you want blasting out the windows.
Yeah.
The initial concept, which I'm gutted we never did it actually, was, but then again, I think the reason we didn't do it is because there's tracks like Wonderwall on the album, which aren't riot music,
sure.
Right? And the initial concept was like a guy sat at his breakfast table, you know, like a city gent kind of thing, having his breakfast. And next to him was a Molotov cocktail with the petrol bomb being lit. That was kind of the original idea, but, you know, it was too title track specific. So in the end, you know, Noel again at that time was, he was getting all philosophical and what have you. And there was a quote he kept saying about, you know, there's never any answers, just more questions. All, you know, it just, any answer just throws up more questions. And that was kind of the vibe that the sleeve was based upon, really. You know, it's like, who are these two guys? Where are they going? Who's he talking to? What's he saying to him? And who's this fella that you never see the face of, the guy walking away? That's what the point of it was, just like more questions that can never be answered, you know.
Sure. And that's, and how come it was like Sean Rowley and you're in there as well? Like, what, how, who did you, why did you choose those guys in particular?
What, me and him?
Yeah.
Well, initially it was going to be Liam and Noel, but the sort of urban myth is they got pissed the night before and didn't bother showing up. That obviously isn't true, because that just wouldn't have happened. We were a lot more organised than that. The actual reason why they were there is because Oasis played at Slane Castle the night before, supporting REM.
Okay.
That's the reason that they couldn't do it. And it was initially going to be, we got this guy from this modelling agency who looked really weird. And I mean really odd. I've still got his rate card upstairs with his picture on it. He looks a real weird fuck. And there's going to be him. And there was going to be a friend of mine from Wigan called Steve Mack. He's dead now, Steve, unfortunately. He's gone, rest his soul. And the pair of these two were going to be wearing the duffel coats that the band wore on the Roll With It sleeve.
Oh, wow. Right?
Yeah, that's what was initially going to happen. And for the life of me, I cannot remember why we didn't go with that. But in the end, it was me and Sean. I think it was just two black blobs that he couldn't get away from. It just didn't look right. We did test shots of Steve wearing Liam's duffel coat, which is now the property of Brian Garcia.
Of course.
And he's now hanging on permanent loan from the ceiling of the Micronaut boutique.
Ah, fantastic.
So in the end, it was me and Sean.
And Owen's in the background as well.
Yeah, blind drunk, waving a master copy of the album in the air. That's basically it, isn't it?
And what about the inlay images as well? Because you've got the... you've got amazing shots, you know, of like that shot of Liam in particular, that's just so brilliant, like the colors and the images, it's so vibrant. And then you've got the little fella in the bowl of sugar, and they're just such cool little images to have in that inlay card.
They're all shot in different places then. The back of Noel's head and Noel's hand, Gwigsy and Alan White, we're all shot. This is amazing little things. I'm going to do a YouTube channel. I keep threatening this, but I am going to do a YouTube channel, because I presume everybody knows all this shit, and nobody does anymore, you know, so, because a lot of people who are into the band weren't even born when we were doing all this. So I'm going to do a YouTube channel and break down each sleeve individually, and you'll be the first to know about it.
Brilliant.
But Noel Gallagher's head, the back of his head and his hand, those are the two shots. Gwigsy and Alan White were all shot in the porter cabin the band were using as a dressing room after the Irving Beach gig. Right?
Okay.
Liam Gallagher is shot in the Copthorne Tara Hotel in London. And Bonehead was shot in Orinoco Studios, the same place where Weller put the guitar down while they were mixing. And the reason why he's blurred, and he's actually got a box of tissues in his hand, because he was that full of a flu, he looked like shit and we couldn't photograph him. So he's like sneezing into a tissue but moving, and that's why he looks like that.
Wow. That is amazing. And the little dude in the sugar jar, that is the...
That was it.
Tell us about that.
That was from Noel's kitchen. It was a sugar jar that Meg had bought. It's an Italian brand, Alessi. And the I just love the way it looked. And we put that Bourbon in. That was to sort of, because the lyrics to Champagne Supernova are a company that pick, and it was the Bourbon's the cannonball reference, slowly walking down the hall faster than the cannonball.
There you go.
Slowly walking down the hall, faster than a cannonball. Where were you while we were getting high? Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide in a champagne supernova in the sky. Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide in a champagne supernova.
Yeah, and the fact that it's in a large amount of white powder is no reference to any other type of white powder. It's sugar.
Well, do you know what? I mean, it is no secret that various members of Oasis were partial to cocaine for all of that period. But I don't know, they wouldn't be that crass, you know what I mean? That's just a bit naff in it, I think. So, I mean, other people have accused me of, if you look at, some might say from a certain angle, it looks like there's a line of beak racked out on the front of that as well. That's purely by chance. It's just the edge of the platform that looks like it. But I've had loads of people, totally independently of each other, ask me, did we do that on purpose? And we said, I have never purposely referenced cocaine in any Oasis artwork. And that's a promise.
The only final thing, it's not related to Morning Glory, but something you mentioned the other day, actually, where... And when I was talking about what are people's favourite singles, that was it. What's people's favourite singles, like not just the song, but actually the B-sides, the artwork, everything. And lots of people obviously being very, very kind about your artwork, as we always get online, Brian, because it's brilliant. There was the discussion about the cigarette boxes. You know, there definitely may be a Morning Glory cigarette boxes. And people saying, oh yeah, it was a great idea. That's why the lads used to come up with such great ideas. And you just came up... that was my idea. So, George, tell us about that. That's a cool way, because that kind of rounded off the whole definitely maybe Morning Glory kind of 1-2 punch, I think.
Well, they were, that actual comment was in reference to the cigarettes and alcohol cassette box.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? But that was, I mean, none of the ideas, the lads didn't come up with ideas per se. You know, if I mean, Noel talked about, you know, it was never a democracy, Oasis. It was very much a dictatorship.
Sure.
I only ever met and discussed with Noel. Anything else that you read anywhere by anybody else is just not true. You know, all the creative meetings were held between me and Noel for all the artwork that I worked upon, obviously. I mean, it changed afterwards. But and we were always looking for, well, I was always looking to do something different. And I think what basically I didn't come up with the idea of doing the CD boxes. I came up with the idea of doing them like cig packets. And the reason why the Benson and Edges, because no one smoked Benson and Edges, basically. That was the way it worked, you know.
But it's crazy, isn't it? In this, that you know, you wouldn't do that now, like, because obviously, like, promoting smoking, you know, it's such a sign of the times, really, that you could get away with that back then.
Yeah, I mean, do you know, it's nothing. I mean, I used to smoke then, I don't smoke anymore. I used to drink then, I don't drink anymore. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's a different time, isn't it? Completely different. It never crossed my mind that anybody would kick off about cigarette packets being, because everybody seems, I'm trying to think back then. Certainly every member of Oasis smoked back then.
Yeah.
I know Bonehead doesn't anymore, and I know Tony's on the e-cigs. Last time I spoke to Noel, he was having one cigarette a day. I guess Liam still smokes, but it was just a different time altogether, wasn't it? You know, it's never crossed my mind that anybody might get over to you about it.
Yeah, no, it is, that cigarettes and alcohol, it's just so cool. It's just such a simple thing. And just the fact, I suppose, that the cassette box is just the same size as a fag packet. Like, it just works so beautifully. It's a crazy situation, but I need a cigarette and alcohol. You can wait for a lifetime to spend your days in the sunshine. You might as well do the white. Brian, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to let you go. But, yeah, just remind the people where they can find the boutique and yourself online.
Yes, the boutique online is that, lo and behold, micronautboutique.com. And if you're ever in the Lake District or the north of England generally, or even in England, come and see us. We are in Kendal. If you Google Micronaut Boutique, it's all on there. And we'd love to see you. And thanks for listening. And I'd just like to thank everybody for just all the messages that I still get to this day from all over the world, you know, about how people love the artwork and how it influenced them, and people have gone on to be designers or whatever as a result. It means the absolute world to me. It still does. So thanks, everybody, and love and peace forever.
Brilliant. Brian Cannon, thank you so much.
One love. Thank you.
So thank you very much to Brian, and make sure you're following him at micro.creative without an E on the end. And he mentioned earlier about the secret thing that he was doing with Bonehead. Basically, the image of the Bonehead Epiphone guitar is available to buy as a limited edition print. I don't know if any are left now, but yeah, it's a really beautiful picture. So yeah, if you want to get your hands on that, then head over to Microdot and check it out. I'll have to get up there myself, actually. I've never been to the lakes. Yeah, I really want to get up there. Obviously, it's a lovely part of the world, but yeah, primarily, let's go and see Brian. Right, thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast, or 1001 albums, if that's why you're here. And most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where we post the episodes early and other special bonus episodes as well. I recently posted a very special little bonus thing when I was digging through the old tapes. And so, so if you go to patreon.com/oasispod, you can check that out. Do please follow Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast and at 1001 Albums Pod. Do please subscribe and review on iTunes if you can. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, it's oasispod@gmail.com, and do feel free. I love to hear from you. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoy the Morning Glory 25 celebration. 25 years, eh? Come back next year for 25 years of Nebworth and Loch Lomond. And then after that, it'll be 25 years of Beer Now. And then, yeah, all crazy. Anyway, as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young. Unshakable.